If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, with every person that I had to bring on to the deal, my share gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Again, like, that's why I got the deal done, because if I had been precious about it or like, no, you know, I need more, then this deal never would have happened, because I needed every person on that team to help me get the deal done.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Justin Frazier is based in New Jersey, invests in Kentucky and in the Carolinas. They currently have about $55 million in assets under management, which is just a little over 1,000 doors. And his expertise is in asset management. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here and talk about real estate, my favorite topic.
This is great. Obviously, it's one of our favorite topics, which is why we're talking about it. Can you give us, you know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah. 7 years ago, I started with a single family rental property, you know, 20, 30 minutes from my house, just sort of realizing, well, what is this real estate thing? You know, maybe make a little money on the side or have some saved up for retirement. And I got the bug pretty quickly, you know, started buying single family houses, flipping, wholesaling, just dabbling in everything, and just tried to figure out, you know, what was right for me. About 4.5 years ago, you know, the market started getting really tight. You know, I say that now, it's even tighter now, but I wasn't finding the same kind of deals in the single family space that were, didn't cash flow as much. And even when I did, you know, it was like all this effort to find a deal that, you know, might cash flow $200. And I just wasn't moving the needle fast enough. So I decided that multifamily might be the way to go. And so I sort of took, not like I took a year off from real estate, but I didn't buy anything for a year. And I really just shifted my focus and learned multifamily underwriting, how financing works, you know, just the lingo, just all the different aspects of, you know, 50 plus unit multifamily, thinking that that's where I wanted to go. And that is where I went. I ended up buying a 40 unit property. I syndicated it. And so I went from single families to a 40 unit. And then we bought that for $2.25 million. And I raised over $600,000 from investors. And then from there, partnered up with some folks who were doing it, who had mentored me. And we picked up property after property in end of 18 into 2019. And then had our largest purchase yet here in 2020. And we're looking for more.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. I want to unpack, you know, a few of those things, maybe your first deal. I'd love to hear about the capital raise on that. You know, was that, walk us through that deal, maybe give us a little more nuts and bolts on that.
Yeah, man, it was tough. It was really hard to go from single family, small portfolio that I was kind of doing it on the side, to bringing people's retirement funds into the picture and them, you know, convincing someone that they should spend, invest, you know, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 with you, and why, how I even knew what I was doing, right? So I sort of started and stopped and learned along the way. You know, I went through a phase where brokers wouldn't even show me a property because I didn't have enough experience. So then I figured out, okay, well, if I need the broker to show me a property, I need someone to have experience. So instead of me and my small portfolio, it's we and us and our larger portfolio. And so I found I found a partner who, you know, I'd known for a long time, was in my market. He had a 50 unit property and a whole over 100, you know, singles and small multifamilies. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go do this. I need you to partner with me. You know, I'm going to do all the legwork, but I need your experience and credibility track record. So when I submitted offers or was talking to brokers, you know, now I had some credibility behind me because I had someone that had a lot more real estate experience than I did. But then we would get to the next phase and, okay, well, now I needed a higher net worth, right? Because I was looking in the $3-ish million range. So I didn't have enough net worth. And, you know, my partner wasn't interested in signing on the loan. So he would give me his experience, but he didn't want to be involved, you know, on the loan side of things, which is fair and fine. So then I had to find someone for that.
What do you mean by that? Was that a balance sheet partner?
Yeah, exactly. A balance sheet partner, someone that had a high net worth that would come in, you know, basically. When I found a property and I was looking at, you know, getting the loan, and the bank said, you know, yeah, you and your wife qualify. I think it was like maybe $1.5 million in loan proceeds. She's like, but the deal itself is good enough that we would actually give you another $400,000 or so, but you don't have the liquidity or the net worth. And so I had to go find someone else that to come on to the team that had more liquidity and net worth than I did. So I gave up some equity in the company.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask you is what'd you give up for that?
Okay. So I ended up giving up equity in the company, ultimately about a quarter of what I was going to get out of my share. And I gave up about a quarter of my share to bring on this person to that had the high net worth and would, but it was a recourse loan.
That's what I was going to ask.
So that's why I saw your surprise face. It's high. But because it's a recourse loan, you know, I really felt like I had to give that up. And that's okay. Because at the end of the day, I was really focused on bringing on whoever I had to bring on to the team to get the deal done. I was more worried about getting the deal done than getting rich off my first deal. I'm not, you know, that's not going to change my life, you know, financially from 140 unit deal. But I knew that from an experience and credibility perspective, it would. So it was more important that I got the deal done than how much of it I held on to.
Right, right. No, that's really smart. Yeah. And so you found, how did you find that balance sheet partner?
So I was running a local real estate networking meeting. And so I had a lot of contacts. I was the guy at the front of the room, you know, bringing on speakers, bringing on scheduling people to come talk to the group. And at one point we had over 100 people coming to the meetings. So not only was I, you know, connecting with the speakers who had a lot of experience, but a lot of the people that came to those meetings, right or wrong, saw me as someone who knew what I was doing because I could run a meeting. So there's sort of this like implied, you know, knowledge if you're at the front of the room. And so I was able to make a lot of contacts with some really great folks here, you know, in my local area in New Jersey. And, you know, I just happened to be talking to them, one, you know, a few people. And, you know, this one guy just said, hey, you know, I know you, I trust you. We've, you know, known each other for years. I'd be interested in coming on and joining your team. And so that's really how it worked out.
So you gave them 25, was this a syndicated deal?
Yeah, it was a syndicated deal.
Okay. So you gave them 25% of the general partnership.
25% of what I was going to be owed. So now remember, I brought in my first partner for the experience and credibility. So he got a few percentage points. Then I had to bring in him for the net worth. I also had another buddy who ended up fronting all the earnest money deposit because I had to put up like 50 grand. Like all my money was already in like the legal and sure. 40, 50 grand of my own money. I didn't have any other money.
So yeah, understood.
When the seller's like, hey, you need like a 50 grand earnest money. I'm like, oh, I don't have any more money. So I brought another buddy in to put in that money early. And so he got a few more points of the general partnership. So, you know, with every person that I had to bring onto the deal, my share gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
Again, like that's why I got the deal done. Because if I had been precious about it or like, no, you know, I need more, then this deal never would have happened. Because I needed every person on that team to help me get the deal done.
Right, right. And that's a great lesson because, you know, you can get tunnel vision on stuff and you have a particular way you want to do it. And in the end, you just made it happen. It was like, all right, look, you know, and maybe things would be different for you today, I would imagine, than maybe the way this one went down. But out of the gate, you did what you had to do.
That's exactly what it was. And I knew, I sort of, you know, when I told you I took that year sort of in between to reassess, like I knew multifamily is where I wanted to go. And getting that first deal, you know, you asked me about the capital raise. As I'm talking to people, so many questions were centered around, well, you haven't done it before. So call me on deal two, call me on deal three, but I'm not, you know, I don't want to be with you on deal one just because, you know, you haven't done it. And so that's a totally fair request. So it made the capital raise tough, but I knew that, you know, that's signaling to me like, okay, if I can just get this deal done, no matter what, the whole world is going to open up after this first deal and I'll be able to do so much more. So that's why it was more about for me getting it done. It's still a good deal getting, you know, not stretching on the numbers or anything, not just doing the deal to get it done and being careless about offer price or anything, but more about not being so precious about what I got out of it and the fees and the equity and everything. It doesn't really matter.
Right, right. Do you still own that asset?
I do. We actually just listed it last week.
Oh, fun. Fun. Good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that'll be hopefully, you know, if what the broker is telling us, it'll be a great exit for all my investors.
Right, right, right. That's always fun. That's always fun. Yeah, there's fun days of the acquisition and the disposition day. It's like, oh, it's when all your hard work comes to culmination. So
yes, yes. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Okay, cool. Well, thanks for unpacking that, because that gives a lot of people an idea for how to start or how to get their first deal across the finish line. Because, man, you need momentum, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just to sum it up, it's like there are 1,000 things you need in this business if you want to get into multifamily. So figure out what they are, like call a broker. And if they won't show it to you, a property to you, because you don't have the experience, well, get the experience. And then you get to the next step and get that. Just bring the people on. You're not going to be able to do it all yourself. You can't, especially as you get into the larger properties. It would be impossible. I could never imagine doing what I did on this 4-unit with the deals that we're doing now all by myself. It just would not work. I'd be lost.
Right, right. So fast forward then to today. So what does your organization look like today?
Yeah, so we have 6 large apartments, you know, ranging from 48 units, but then more in like the 150s, 160s, 200s. And then our last deal that we bought was 336 units. And that was in the fall of last year. And we have an underwriter and an acquisitions guy who's like, his role is to find us our deal. Like, we have very specific market criteria in the Carolinas and in Kentucky. And we know exactly the kind of property we're looking for. And he goes and that's his role, to go get it. Then we have the guy that is like super smart with the spreadsheets and underwriting and does the underwriting. We have a partner. My partner, Matt, does a lot of the capital raising, has a great, you know, following on YouTube and Bigger Pockets. So he's able to bring a lot of money to our group. And then myself, I do the asset management and the construction management. And so, you know, for me, that's, you know, everything that happens from the time you get the property sort of identified, building the business plan, through actually running the business. I say it's a business because buying an apartment complex is a business. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm running the business of the apartment complex all the way through disposition.
Are you guys self-managing?
We do not. So we always use third-party managers. I feel very strongly about using third-party managers because they are the experts in their local markets. And they have relationships with vendors and local municipalities and inspectors and everyone else. And so I love to rely on their local expertise.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no, that, I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. You know, yeah. I think there's at some point, you know, the bigger you get, at some point you see that might be a viable next step.
Correct.
But, you know, right now it would just be building a whole other business right out of the gate. So talk to me about asset management. What does your work look like when in the asset management? In probably the non-educated person's mind, or the person not sitting in your seat's mind, perhaps, it's like, okay, once you buy it, you plug in third-party management and you get a report every month. I bet that's not the case.
So that might be the case if you have like a single family house, but the larger your properties get, the more divergent asset management and property management actually are. And the way to sum it up is the asset manager is the person that's responsible for the setting the vision and the business plan and making sure it gets executed. So while the property managers are in the day-to-day, they're in the grind, they're writing leases and, you know, screening tenants and doing everything at the actual property, the asset manager is controlling the flow of money and making sure that we're hitting our budget schedule and timeline so that we can come in, you know, on time, on budget, and within scope, right? So a lot of, you know, what a project manager might do. But really, as we're raising money for our deals, we're talking about all these great things we're going to do. I can't just give that to a property manager and say, okay, go, right? Someone has to direct that. You know, on our last deal, we're doing $4.5 million in renovation work in our CapEx budget. So my role is to direct that, right? Now I'm not necessarily walking units with contractors. That's like the property manager level. Sure. But I am saying, okay, we're going to hit this initiative. Here's our scope. Here's our plan. You know, I need to go and we're going to paint all the buildings. So now let's get into this. We're going to do a rebranding project. And so I'm setting that strategy and working above the property manager, but also very closely with our property managers, because, you know, they're obviously executing the actual vision.
Right, right. And so you're basically the owner's, you are the owner, but you're the owner's representative, if you will, that just says, hey, this is what we want this to look like.
Yeah. And we are very hands-on, you know, with our property managers. I let them do their thing. I don't want to get into the property management level, but I want to be a partner with them. And I want to have high touch, you know, our latest property twice a week we meet. I'm visiting the properties every 4 weeks or so. And that slows down when you're not doing as much construction work. But when it's a new property or there's a lot of moving pieces, you've got to be there, right? And you've got to make sure that the team is a rocking team and they know your vision, you know? And so there's a lot of sort of handholding in the beginning. But once you have good people in place and they know what you want, then you can let them go and execute your plan.
Right, right. Yeah. Do you feel like when you go on site and do those, every 4 week site visits, especially early on, do you find, obviously you found that it'd be beneficial. Is that going on site? You just find things, you say, hey, no, I want this done differently than what you're doing it. Or what is that? Or is that just, what's the purpose of that?
So I'll set not even a formal agenda, but maybe I'll send my property manager, you know, the three key things I want to do on this trip. I want to see the units that we've been renovating. I want to talk to the maintenance staff about the work orders that are coming in. And I don't know, I want to, you know, meet with a contractor or something, you know, if we have a big project coming up, whatever just happens to be sort of top of mind or coming up next. If I do nothing else on the trip and I get those three things done, then I'm happy. But what I find is that when you get there, there's 100 things that come up, because if you're just there and I don't come in and just start pointing like, no, 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 no. Mm-hmm. Like I want to let the property breathe. I want to let the team breathe. And I want to hear from them what's going on, because I hired them and I'm a big believer in, as I said, in third-party management for a reason. I want them to do their job. I don't want to micromanage them. So if there's a, let's say we're looking at a renovated unit and I'm not, personally, I don't like something that's been done and it's maybe not up to my quality standards. Instead of coming in and, you know, stamping my feet, I might have the talk to the maintenance supervisor and say, hey, tell me your thoughts on this. Tell me your thoughts on, you know, what we're doing here, right? And they might say, oh yeah, that's not acceptable. We've already got a solution. Or yeah, we missed that. And that's really not up to our quality standards. And so instead of coming in as an owner that's sort of overbearing, you know, I let them stand up for themselves and then we have a conversation about it. And so I'm building trust with the team on site, which means they're going to call me when there's a problem. They're going to talk to me. They're going to give me the real deal when I show up and we're chatting sort of on the side. And a lot of the site visits is just that, just talking to the team, because they know what's happening. They know about the guy in that unit that's, you know, selling things that he shouldn't be selling or like whatever, right? I always find out some kind of surprise when you visit, because you have to have a good relationship with them. And sometimes it's just very basic and you don't find anything and it's just, hey, yeah, unit renovations look great. Quality's good. You know, things are moving. Great to see everybody. Here's, you know, let me buy you all lunch and then you move on, you know, and that's great. It doesn't usually go that way, but I do find that even if things are going well, it's great to have that high touch with them just to build a relationship. I've had maintenance guys call me and be like, look, you don't know what's happening at this property. Let me tell you, right? This is before we had the quality management companies that we have now. We had some troublesome ones in the past. And, because I had bought those guys lunch and, you know, had built a relationship, you know, somebody called me and said, hey, you're something funny is going on here. And so they sort of alerted me to a situation. So you never know what's going to come out of building a good relationship with the people on site, but having that visibility, everyone has my phone number. They can call me. Some of them were friends on Facebook. You know, it's open and I just want to build a strong relationship with them, because that only helps us and our investors and the overall quality of the property.
Right. That's awesome. You said you had some troublesome management companies in the past. What were some things that you missed pre-hiring of them that maybe would have tipped you off to the problems that you later discovered?
Yeah, great question. One thing that you can't always tell about a management company is how they keep their records and how on top of the financials they are and how on top of the money they are. Because on these properties, there's so much money, you know, from the operations coming in and going out. But there's if we're doing renovations, I mean, that just magnifies everything. And so we had a management company that just could not keep good records, and we did not know where our money was going. And, you know, I would approve things to be spent and then I'd get to the property and they weren't done. And it's like the money hit the account and it's no longer there, but where's the work? And so this is all sort of part of the growing process. You know, we have processes in place now that can make it very hard for that to happen now, but you don't know what you don't know, especially as you're, you know, starting to build multifamily asset management, you know, and you're doing these construction projects. You know, what I find is when you invest out of state, you're an outsider, even to the staff and to the other investors there and the contractors. You're, you know, I'm the guy from New Jersey coming into North Carolina or Kentucky. You know, I'm an outsider. So if I don't have some allies over there, you know, it's easy for someone to trick you. Yeah. Mm. So I guess the answer, that was a long way of saying, you know, we now get really good references. And a lot of what we ask for when we're hiring a new management company is for references on how good the books are, how clean the cash management is. Cash management is absolutely crucial. That's most of what I do is cash management. Money in, money out, where's it going? To make sure that we're not, you know, we're spending where we need to spend, but also that we're not getting taken advantage of too.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. You bring that up, that cash management side of things, because you're probably digging in on reports and things that, you know, that you're just looking for errors. And I mean, have you become an expert in this?
You know, I think so.
unintentionally.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of trial by fire, but you know, you start to realize when things look out of place. And, you know, if it's not just, you know, well, this contractor's overcharging us, but even on the operations side, are we making enough? And if we are making money at the end of the month, well, where's that money going? Is it getting sort of recycled back in and now it's going towards construction? Or am I able to draw that money out as a profit? You know, it's like we have separate bank accounts for all these different places where the money should be. But that was like learned, right? And in the beginning, it was like everything is in one bank account. And I don't know if it's money for construction or it's operations or if I'm profitable or if I'm losing money because it's all sort of in one account. So, you know, we learned a lot of that the hard way. So now we've got some great processes and procedures where that doesn't happen anymore.
Wow. That's really cool. Give us I know we talked offline about some stuff you guys are looking at, which I'm not asking you to disclose that here, but give us kind of what you see the next 3 to 5 years for you guys. What if you could have your ideal pick of what your multifamily portfolio looks like?
So we set a goal for this year to bring on another $50 million in assets this year. We're selling a few as well, so we'll have at least two exits this year, and at least another 50. Of course, almost as soon as we set that goal, we found a project we're working on that would get us, you know, 70-80% of the way there approval right there. So that would be awesome. We're looking for just to buckle down on the areas that we're in the Carolinas, in Kentucky. We're really a C-class value add. You know, we look for operational upside. We look for properties that have crime and need renovations and need us to come in and put a lot of money into it. And that's what we're good at doing. And so that's what we're looking for. So we're trying not to get distracted with, you know, new markets or different types of properties and just really focus in on what we know we're good at and can be successful with.
Right. Oh, that's great. That's great. I love that. Let's jump into the final four. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Meet and talk to as many people as possible that are doing what you want to do. So if you want to be an expert wholesaler, go talk to all the wholesalers. If you want to get into multifamily like me, go talk to me, talk to the podcasters, talk to people that are guests on podcasts, tell them you listen to their episode and ask them questions, build relationships, because those will be the people that will help you get to where you want to go.
Love that. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Great question. I am doing a podcast all about asset management and I will promote that. But for me, it like helps me learn from other people and, you know, to be able, like you, right, to be able to ask questions you want to ask of people that are doing it, has been so helpful because that's giving me tips and tricks. And sometimes I'll finish doing an interview and I'll fire off an email to my property manager, like, hey, we're going to try this new thing I just learned today, right? I just got this great tip. Let's do it. So that's actually really keeping me, you know, in top of line with what's happening.
Right. Yeah, there is value in what we are doing right now that a lot of people probably don't, they haven't even considered. So that's, it's interesting you said that.
Yeah, it's kind of the secret about podcasting, right? It's like, I don't really care how many downloads I get on my show. I care that, you know, Sam and I can have a great chat here and talk about real estate. And then what do we do after and how we follow up and build a relationship?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Yeah, that's really cool. You could do a whole episode on the values of this type of networking in itself. So that's really cool. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
Man, I love that question. I want to help everyone learn about real estate investing. You know, I mentioned the meetup that I ran, you know, pre-COVID. Unfortunately, we have not gotten back together here in over a year, but we're doing it virtually. And as much as we can, I want to help spread the good word about real estate investing, whether people wanted their first flip or rental property, whatever. I want to help everyone do it. So whatever I can do to help. Yeah.
Right. That's awesome. That's great. Justin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
My podcast is True Multifamily. We talk all about asset management. Justin@truemultifamily.show is the website. Podcast True Multifamily. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Justin Fraser. You can find me there.
Awesome. Justin, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.